Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Pardonable Podcast. I'm your host, as usual, David Lilly. This is episode 60, and I have a great guest. We're going to be talking a lot about politics and super smart stuff like that. But before I get to that, if you like this podcast, which if you're a first-time listener, you're like, I don't know if I like it yet. Who cares if you don't or you do know you like it? Go and hit the like and subscribe button. Do that for me. And if you're really hardcore, like this is the greatest podcast in the world, you can actually go to pardonablemerch.com right up front. Here's an ad promo for my stuff. If you want to support this podcast, you can use promo code podcast, get 15% off. That's all of my profits, from these shirts. And these got all kinds of cool designs. I got some new ones coming up, at the beginning of the year. I'm going to flood that thing. I've been doing some revamping on that. And so I'm going to flood that thing with some really cool designs. So go there, check it out, support the podcast. By buying a shirt, you'd be the cool kid in town. And be like, well, hey, where'd you get that shirt? Did you get that at Costco? You'd be like, no way, dude. PardonableMerch.com. Anyway, guys, we made it to 60. I mean, I knew I was going to make it to 60 all along, but it still feels pretty good. Right here towards the end of the year, we're going to see how to close this year out, but I wanted to close it out with a large bang. And so my guest tonight, he's a cultural commentator. He's a what I like to call a poli-sci pioneer. He's on the quest, searching for a party home. And he's given a voice to all those who are politically dispossessed on a show called Searching for Political Identity. My guest is a returning guest. His name is Brian Eskow. Brian, what's Hello. Going on, man?
Wow, that's a really wonderful introduction. I hope I deserve it, but it made me feel really good.
If you really pay attention to it, I didn't say a whole lot. No, I'm just playing. I've been getting better. I've been getting better with my intros, trying to spice them up.
You sound good. You look good.
I know.
You do good work, man. And I'm so pleased to be here for that reason. And the fact that you're a nice guy.
Oh, well, you didn't have to add the nice part. Now I'm feeling flattered.
Yeah. That's the trick. Oldest trick in the book.
Welcome back to the Pardonable Podcast.
Thank you, brother. Thank you so much. It has been a little while, and pleased to be here. Appreciate it.
Yeah. So before we get into how your year was, give a little intro to who you are and your show, because you have a show. Mm-hmm. I mentioned it in the intro.
Obviously. Yeah.
Tell me about it.
Well, I myself have felt politically dispossessed for a while, and I assume that there are some others that feel the same way. I know there are. How much of a percentage we are, who knows? But in the current climate of going to law school during the Trump years and then the pandemic happening, being in law school for that also, the interesting ride that Trump was, but also the overreaction to Trump. Getting your dose, a heavy dose of critical race theory in law school, which I took in two electives. I didn't just get it passing. Being 34 now and having worked, all this time now as an adult, being back in school with people fresh out of college, all of that put together, my relationship with my dad growing up in a liberal house, questioning who I am in terms of my Jewish identity.
I totally forgot.
Where do I fit? Yeah. So, and that's only most recently with the Israel Gaza situation, sad situation. It's led me to question, search for my political identity and question if I want to continue voting for Democrats like I always have. So I voted for Obama twice, Hillary and Joe. That's my little thing that I say. And then that's the frame against which I say, but hey, look at all this stuff I say against the Democrats. Why do I keep railing against the Democrats? And why am I so attracted to things Republicans say generally? Trump is a whole nother conversation. But generally, why do I feel like Republicans are saying things that I agree with more lately? So I started a podcast to connect with fine people and really, though, like-minded people and mostly thought leaders of all kinds of varieties.
Yeah. Yeah, man. And you've had some pretty awesome guests, myself included.
Yep.
How was this past? I mean, hold on. Before we go there, when did you start the podcast? I don't think I asked you that last time you were on.
March 2021. It was either during the towards the end of my first semester. It was in my final year of law school. I can't remember if it was the end of my first semester studying a critical race theory course or the beginning of the second semester studying a critical race theory course, but it was definitely in that time, March 21.
Okay.
And and I've tried to do it every week. I've averaged about that. You know, what I say to people is that it's a pilot light that's lit.
Yeah.
So it's there, it's burning, it's hasn't taken off yet, but I'm proud of it. I feel enriched by it, and I'm going to keep going for now.
Yeah, man. I'm in the same category. I don't know. I wouldn't say, I guess everything is relative in the category, like what's taken off. You've had some pretty sure. rad guests.
No, you know. I 100% have.
How
no,
you're dare right. you, Brian?
Let me make a distinction between
I'm
how
calling
well
up
my
all your guests
does
and like,
generally.
You know, this guy said, yeah.
I've had some amazing guests. Angela McArdle is the first one that comes to mind before good. She, while she was running for chair of the National Libertarian Party. She's the chair that she won.
Yeah,
you know, so that's a contact I have.
She won't return my calls. You know, I don't know. No, I'm just playing.
I feel really proud of the guests that I know that I've gotten lucky relative to the tour that I'm on. If I'm on the toilet tour, in some regards, somehow I've managed to like grab some good people. So that's amazing. Yeah.
I was going to say like, dude, I don't know how you've done it, but that would have been even more of an insult. dude, that actually, well, you answered my question. Cause what I was going to say is you've had a lot of great people on. I've listened to the podcast, especially the ones that are people I recognize. And I was just sitting back. I was like, I wonder, over the past, since you've been on, I didn't know about you till me and you talked and chatted about each other's podcast and went on each other's podcast. But since you've been on, I was like, I wonder, beside me, obviously, who was your favorite guest to have on that gave you a good idea where you stand politically or swayed you into a political.
Okay, so if the metric is what guest had the most sway.
Not the most
not necessarily not who my favorite was, because that's more subjective, right? But who had the most impact one way or another?
Give me both. Let's do both.
Okay. I'm not sure that I can answer the favorite one. I mean, I interviewed episode 14, I remember, was with a three-time Pulitzer Prize winning journalist from the Atlantic, Bart Gellman. He was one of like three journalists who broke the Edward Snowden story.
Oh, wow.
And he wrote a book. He's had a few bestsellers. One of them is called Dark Mirror.
Oh yeah.
Talking to him about that was probably, that was really cool. But there's honestly, like every time I talk to someone, I go, shit, that was like the best conversation ever. So favorite stuffer, but most impact, I'm going to probably go with Herb K, a guy who I've ended up having on like 8 times.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. But the reason I would say is that he's the one person who not only has a clear thought process on politics and worldview, but he actually created, he's a real thought leader. He drafted a plan. He does projects. His new thing is called the 1964 plan.
Okay.
The 1964plan.org for anyone interested. But he takes action in the form of papers that he writes, and he's got a bunch of ideas. And so because he has the most proposals and ideas, I would have to say that he's had the most sway. And he's a libertarian for sure.
Of course, these stupid libertarians, man. They keep messing everything up.
He's a smart one.
I know. Oh, I say stupid.
Even if you, you got to understand, he did some questionable things. You know, let me be blunt. Sadly, he went to jail for 6 years for committing a tremendously serious financial fraud, and I make no apologies for his behavior, and I don't know much about
it. That's very libertarian, okay? To be honest with you. That's right up that libertarian.
Right.
I had Dan Berman on. He's known as Dan Taxationist Theft Berman, and me and him just talked about how to not pay taxes, so... It's right up these libertarians.
No, this guy, from what I understand, frauded people, scammed people really bad.
Oh, okay.
But him going to jail for 6 years is what led him, gave him experience with a certain population, and enabled him to ultimately create this new thing. And so it's kind of funny and strange putting my eggs in that basket, but I didn't commit any crimes, you know, and he's on a redemption tour. So
I was about to say that, man, those redemption arcs, they might be priceless when it comes to the human experience and being able to kind of capture that. Especially if you're doing it on a podcast, is even better, because then you start to, get your audience to be like, yeah, dude, I mean, that stuff he did was pretty bad, but oh my God, that's kind of smart. Or,
he's an interesting cat, a very smart guy. And, anyway, I could go on, but he's given me the most, things to talk about in terms of like stuff to chew on in terms of a guest, I guess. But, that's a good question. And probably not fair, because I really have had so many good ones.
Well, no, that's fair. And you've had a lot of really good libertarians, like Angela, you brought up, and then this guy. It seems like, here's when I say stupid libertarians, it's only because I kind of fall into that group. And I try to...
You know what another one is?
What's another one?
I'm sorry to interrupt
you. No, you got...
ANCAP Air.
Yeah. Yeah, super smart.
That dude... just has the info and presents it in a clear way. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. See, that's where I run into, this is what throws me off about political parties and stuff like that. It's because I rarely find, everyone says like the libertarians are all wacky. They don't want you to have a driver's license. Everybody can drive a car. People should own nuclear weapons. And you're like, all right, I get these caricatures, like the Ron Swanson caricature. But if you sit one down and you go, oh, how do you feel about economics? I guarantee they've read way more than your average, even people that work in political campaign.
Right.
Like they're highly intelligent. And if people, as an ongoing joke, people always equate to autism. But I think there is something there.
Yeah, it's immediately what I thought of when you mentioned reading a lot of economics.
Yeah, I play jokes about them all the time. I talk about, I brought this up on my last podcast, Rob. I always make fun of libertarian podcasters because their background sucks so bad. There's nothing. And I'm like, you do this for a living. Like, and so I started painting stuff and ragging on them. But I use the term as them being autistic. It's an ongoing joke in the libertarian party. And so I have no qualms.
Yeah, no, I've heard it. It's something I picked up on X.
Most jokes.
That term gets thrown around.
Most jokes have a little bit of truth to them. And I think they definitely
do. Yeah. And it's a fascinating, think about that though for a second. It really is interesting. Autism, what? Some social disorder, and the group at large wants to have no social order, very minimum social order. Yeah. It's very interesting.
It makes sense.
But yet they believe in autonomy, and so you wouldn't, it's just interesting.
Yeah, I haven't done a deep dive into like, I mean, we can have a podcast of what causes
how retarded libertarians are. No, I'm kidding. No, that's going to get me canceled.
No, you can't cancel somebody who hasn't
made it.
Let's be honest. Amazing. Say whatever we want.
I'm never launching.
Neither one of us are now. Thanks, Brian. Fuck. We're both screwed just because that won't come. No, to be honest, I think it's a fun. Truthfully, the word retard is just an engineering word. It's a mechanical term.
Well, I'm dating. Well, you know, I'm dating someone now, thank God. Someone's taking mercy on me.
Bad segue, dude. Don't go from
and she she is she would not be happy with that. And it wasn't maybe the even most charming use of the word, but I'm a 90s child. I have bad tendencies.
You segued right into it. Speaking of the term retard, I'm dating this child. Oh man.
She's the opposite of retarded, but she may be. Look who she's dating.
Every once in a while I'm doing podcasts, no one knows about this little inside baseball. I write down timestamps of being like, this would be a good clip.
Might have to edit this one.
Anyway, this is starting to turn out to be my favorite episode.
I thought this was a free for all.
It is. This is my favorite episode so far. I'm loving it. What I was going to say is they're super smart. Most libertarians are way smarter than me. I'm not in that category. I haven't read all the books, but I don't know where they get the rap. I mean, I do. There are some crazy ones. I get it. They're the loudest too, because most libertarians aren't super, unless you get them on a topic like, hey, well, how are we going to build roads? And they're like, let me tell you. And so you get into that. But I try to space my libertarian guests out because they're great. They're great to talk to because they always have ideas that no one thinks of. Because you can turn on CNN or Fox and kind of get a gist of what Republicans think and what Democrats think, but you really don't know unless you really sit down with a libertarian who has some, and most of them all have like their thing. Like Scott Horton is super anti-war, and you have all these different libertarians who are, have their niche, and I like that about them. But back on the social, it does make sense. Is if you were autistic and you social cues aren't something you pick up on, or it's not something that you're super fluent with, which I, from what I understand, that seems to be an aspect of somewhere on the spectrum. It would make sense that they would be like, well, I just don't want to have to be forced into that. I like that they would find themselves being autonomous on their own.
I don't want
to
play that game.
Exactly. And so,
and is it healthy?
Yeah. Is it healthy?
That's an interesting question. Well, is it healthy to not want to play that game, to want to be an individual to that extent, to be that obsessed with it? It's not, you know, as a libertarian, and there's so many degrees, and we could spend an hour talking about libertarianism, but just by itself. But is the idea that you don't want or need a government healthy? It's an interesting question.
It is. What are your thoughts on it? What do you think?
Well, you come out of law school, you go into law, and you learn about the box, the game, the, you know, the rules, the, and it was so interesting to me because I was just floating around my whole life, you know, not knowing my ass from my elbow, right? And law school was like, oh, wow, you know, that's interesting. Contracts, torts, criminal law, constitutional law. You start to see how the society operates. It's based on law. It's based on history and law. It's absolutely fascinating. I loved law school. And then you start, I start this podcast and I start talking to libertarians. And the whole idea is that whole thing you just learned about, that beautiful design, that structure that, you know, you fell in love with learning about, always loved, kind of a you know, grow up to be patriotic. Yeah. Raised to be that way, growing up in a nice suburban town in New Jersey, even if my dad wasn't the most USA type of guy. But you get that. And libertarianism's like, no, dude, that's all evil. It's bad. It's not just unnecessary. It's bad. It's oppressive and it's unnecessary. And so, you know, minarchist, the whole range of ideas within libertarianism, but it all tracing back to the idea that everything should be based on voluntary associations. And, I, you know, the social contract is a bullshit concept. I didn't sign anything. What's that attributed to? Lysander Spooner. I haven't read his work, but he's a person who his name keeps being mentioned in terms of libertarian icons. And so just philosophically, I am attracted to the idea that people, well, if you believe that the power resides with the people and everyone can get behind that, it's pretty attractive. So libertarianism to me is the non-aggression principle, you know, taxation is theft, take care of yourself, do unto, you know, and so it's pretty simple, it's principled, it's attractive. And the idea being that people who need help aren't going to be left to die on the streets, that that institutions will arise. It's
roads will be built.
There roads will be built. And that you have to get past this state mentality where and these people believe that if you were to dismantle the state, things would actually get better. And so it's just a far cry from progressivism.
Yeah, that's I figured that out too pretty early on of how much, because I always looked at, it seems like libertarian, I don't know why we're talking about, we're stuck on libertarian, but that's fine. Let's hash this out.
Because I was hoping we would almost because I mean, okay, well, you ask me anything you want. If you have questions for me, I don't know what you would want to know about me, but
so back to your girlfriend. No, just
oh, she.
Oh, man. Anyway, yeah. Well, here's I forgot what I was going to go.
No,
with that.
We're talking a lot about libertarianism, and maybe it was maybe too much for your liking. But what are you thinking?
No, no, not too much for my liking. Here's because where do you fall before I say my statement? Where do you? Because I'll give you my stance. I'm probably in the libertarian camp about 60% of the time. Mm-hmm. I probably fall on the right wing side. Mm-hmm. I'm what I think people say it's a pejorative, but I think it's pejorative. Conservatarian, because I'm pretty much like that. Like I come from a conservative viewpoint. I would say I have some left-leaning tendencies, but they're really not. They're just libertarian tendencies. Mm-hmm. I'd be full-on right wing. It's the authority thing that I bump up against, which puts me more so in the libertarian camp. So most things fall in that. But the reason I like talking to you about it, because normally when I'm talking about libertarianism, it's to hardcore libertarians.
Yeah.
Do you fall in the libertarian camp? What percentage would you say?
It's a great question. And it's the political compass map, right? With the quadrants.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when I tested it, I got left leaning libertarian. I'm not ready to go all in on libertarianism, which to me, in my mind, at this point in my understanding, true libertarianism is ANCAP.
Yeah. Basically.
I mean, probably a huge discussion we had there, but in my mind, so I would say, well, I'm trying to figure out what that 40% is, if it's 20, if it's 40, and which way it is. So it's a great question, because I definitely feel at least 60% libertarian. That other 40%, meaning that we assume that there's some role for the state, which way do you want to go? And that's so it's a good question, bro. And I don't have the answer.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's why I like talking to you about, because me and you, we're not in that camp, but I guess I could say, oh, go ahead.
Yeah. I do find myself leaning right. And I don't know if that's just the experience. I guess it's just the experience I've had, man, with social issue training and bias, exposure to bias training. It's just, I don't know what it is. My friends being conservatives, but I'll put it this way. Currently, without a leader on the Democratic side to inspire me and show me what we're fighting for and what we believe in, I know it's more services, and I don't mean to say that pejoratively. I know it's more redistribution of wealth. I don't mean to sound silly. I know it's more taking care of people. That's what the pitch would be. But like I said in the intro, I just, with social issues and even economic issues now, I feel like the notes Republican hits are a little more pleasing to my ear. So no disrespect to like Joe Biden, but he's not inspiring me. And so absent clear direction and understanding, I do lean towards who I like hearing from more, and the Republicans have my ear, I will say.
Well, do you, I think you're spot on with that, not being super inspired by Joe Biden and them not really having a leader to be inspired by.
Yeah.
The thing that I get, here's where I get hung, and I understand politics is itself a game, but what really turns me off on the Democrat side is the fact that the emperor has no clothes and they refuse to acknowledge it. That the fact that Biden isn't a likable character, that he isn't all there. Like you can tell, he's getting old. Sense, like his gaffes are so numerous, it's almost not funny anymore. It was funny for like the first few years. And then you're like, God, this guy, this is rough. And the fact that like everyone can see it, and we're all going like, everyone can see this. Oh, here's a good example. And this is a terrible example, because I don't even know what this kid's about. But there's this kid on Twitter named Harry Sisson. Apparently he's like a TikTok influencer. Mm. The stuff that he tweets, it has to be just, he's either a bot. He's like one of those animatronic bots that they made into a person. Because he just says like, Biden looks great. He looks like he can lift twice his weight. And you're like, dude, what? What are you doing? Like, right. you're so delusional.
And that account, I don't know that I still follow him, but he's like, I'm like, damn, like, I gotta have this guy on the podcast because he's either a very brilliant progressive kid,
or he is
also, or he's a paid shill. You know, I gotta find out.
Or he's the other thing we talked about earlier in the episode,
right?
Mm-hmm. It starts with an R. We can't.
Yeah,
say that.
And we don't know what that is because this has been polished up nicely.
Well,
in the cutting room.
Exactly. Man, I hate to tell you this. I'm not gonna edit that out.
Damn it.
No, I will. Maybe we'll see.
I
might make it. I might make it my. The thing I put in the front loop. Of the music. Yeah.
Intro, recurring intro.
But yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I think it was proven that he was a paid shill. But regardless, even that, like, I
not
follow.
Surprising. Sure seemed like one.
Right? Yeah.
And
I think that's a thing, but it's that constant, that constant thing with it. It just seems like they're lying. They know they're lying and everyone knows they're lying. It's that part. If there was a bit of honesty coming from at least the people propping them up. I don't know how many times I've watched the press secretary avoid question, which I know she's a spin doctor. I get it. But some of it's just so blatant. Like, we all know you're lying. You're not even trying anymore. Or it's so difficult that, you know, you're stuck between a rock and a Biden. And how do you get out of that situation? So,
yeah, I haven't been watching much news lately. And I kind of stopped watching those press. Jen Psaki was pretty good television,
She was better. Yeah. Well, she's still on television.
Well, I heard her talking the other day, and I don't want to judge with Lawrence O'Donnell, and I certainly wouldn't want anyone to judge me after a 2-minute clip.
Well, they will, buddy.
She didn't sound, well, here we go then. She didn't sound that impressive, even in terms of just like, you know, she didn't seem to be that interesting of a personality in her new role, and maybe I'm wrong here, but she certainly was in that role. It was a good combination because she was very good in that role. So I tailed off when she stepped down, but I like that John Kirby guy. And this is not a shot at what is her name, Karine Jean-Pierre.
Yeah,
that might be her name.
Might be.
I just think John Kirby's pretty. He's a stud. You know, the guy that comes out and does the Pentagon talk? You know, the white guy?
Yeah, yeah. The white guy? Which one? There's so many
the
white
one,
guys.
The president, you know that one.
Yeah.
There's only like 10 left.
If you can,
thanks
if
to the Democrats.
True. It's true. Well, diversity is our strength. They don't like that guy very much. Oh, that's my other thing. So here's going back. Let's circle back because I got another question. Going back on the libertarians concept versus like, where's that 40% where you're not sure where you lean? This was a good litmus test. I'm gonna give it to you. Well, not I don't know the true answer, but this kind of told me where I fall. So did you watch the debates, the most recent one?
I did watch the most recent one. Yes.
So there was a question posed to Chris Christie, and it was about him signing in the transgender transition surgery law, where he was like, and they were like, well, what's your feelings about this? Should parents be allowed to, you know, transition their kids at a young age, do hormones? He was like, I stand by that. And his whole stance was, you could tell, came from a very libertarian concept, being like, Republicans are about small government. We don't want the government interfering. I want parents to be able to make those decisions for their kids. But up till now, Vivek would have been probably the only one in that whole debate section that seemed libertarian. But I don't think we got a take on his. But I don't think his take was
his take is that you should not be able to do that until you're 18. Okay. And it's an interesting, it's one of the very few, possibly the only that I can think of, issue where Vivek is not very close to a pure libertarian.
Yeah, right.
And so that was a very interesting exchange. Christie taking the libertarian parental rights view, and DeSantis, understandably or maybe on brand, said no. The state has a role, and it's to prevent child abuse, which, in his opinion, gender reassignment surgery is. And Vivek has the same view. So I'm not sure there's any daylight there between them.
Well, see, that was kind
of very interesting.
that, well, that also told me a little bit about myself too. So I don't know where you fall.
Yeah.
Again, mm-hmm. libertarian, but I would have fallen. Yeah. I would have felt, I would lean more toward, well, not lean. I would find myself in the Ron DeSantis Vivek camp.
Yep. Yeah.
Because I do look at that as child abuse.
Same here.
But that
not
makes
that
me.
I was just going to say, not that I would say that that's child abuse, because I know that and believe that based on my research, but because Vivek actually had the line, if you can't smoke an addictive cigarette before the age of 18, you should, and so that, I agree.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Well, the thing, but it, again, it goes back to a libertarian stance of authority, and that's why I have a hard time mm-hmm. falling. There's like yeah. these real thin mm-hmm. lines where I can't sign on to full on blown ANCAP. And here's a cool, so there's a saying, and this is where I think at the core, fundamentally at the core where I fall. And I haven't thought this out. So I haven't sat down with a libertarian to really hash this out that much. Even though I claim to be one. But there's this common saying, and I do believe it. No man is an island unto himself. So mm-hmm. no matter what, and people say, well, there are victimless crimes. You could kind of pull that, but even at the end of the day, most crimes, if you analyze them, there is a victim. Most of the time, it's the person committing the crime is their own victim of their own crime, depending mm-hmm. on how you do it. I mean, if it's like, if it's a drug thing, mm-hmm. you know, smuggling drugs, well, you know, they're the victim. That, I mean, it gets into the weeds, but overall, there is a rare instance where any crime, there is no victim, is where I kind of fall mm-hmm. into, because there's a chain reaction to everything. And so, I probably would be a minarchist because right. but I know where that road leads down, which if you follow minarchism down to its, you know, end result, it's probably tyranny. And so you're kind of left to either complete anarchy, like ANCAP, what you talked about, and anything outside of that eventually slopes down into tyranny, or at least can. And so I struggle with that. That's where I'm at, but there's no way I could, because I go back to the child abuse thing. You know, you can't be libertarian. I mean, I guess you could, and be completely all about no government if your neighbor's beating his kids in his front yard. Like, what do you do then? Is it vigilante justice at that point? Mm-hmm. Or you go, well, you know, I can read to him Heiss, and, you know, maybe Rothbard, and maybe he'll change his ways. Maybe tell him about Jesus, and maybe he'll stop beating his kids at the supermarket. Right. But other than that, what authority do you have? That's where I get stuck.
Yeah, no, and so that's where I am too. What is the proper role of government? Period.
Yeah.
How big should it be? It comes from that, and what should it do? But are we really going to say that there is no role for a centralized monopoly on violence, as the libertarians or the ANCAPs would call it, right? Is there no role for the state? So I was just reading a paper. I was cleaning my trunk of my car last night that had a box of papers that my dad gave to me a few months ago from my like high school years. And this was eighth grade. And so it was a write-up on Locke and Hobbes. And I was like, oh, wow, I should really know this. I guess I did at one point. But Locke saying that man, absent government, absent society, would exist in a state of nature, pleasant, cooperative, all that. Whereas Hobbes famously had the opposite view, in that therefore Hobbes was a fan of the state. Basically, there is a role for the state. And so just tying that into, are there any interests that were... Is there anything that we as a society are willing to hand over to the state? And so, no, I'm not there yet saying that the answer is nothing.
Yeah.
But it's, I'm not there yet.
I'm not there yet either. Part of me wants to be, but my faith in humanity is not. It's not.
So maybe we're Hobbesians.
I would probably put myself there. Yeah. I don't know if you leave man unto his own devices. I think we have a clear history of how that turns out. And that's where I'm like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. In some instances, the better angels take hold and people do the right thing on their own fruition. Here's another thing that throws me off that people don't talk about when it comes to libertarianism or even just freedom in general, because libertarians love their freedom. is the responsibility aspect. Like, all freedom requires a hardcore responsibility with it. Mm-hmm. That's my assessment of why people like bigger government, because it's less responsibility on your own. And libertarians have a pretty big concept being like, no one's coming to save you. The only people who can save you is each other. So, you know, obviously being big into volunteerism, but there is no safety in that. It is kind of up to the wind. If someone is down and out or dispossessed, you are kind of leaning in on the better angels of humanity to help you out instead of a mandated government. And that requires, that puts a lot more responsibility on the people. And that's all I'm saying. I think if you took like a large section of people, cut 100, the entire United States, the entire population, cut 100 people out of it, I would say maybe 30 people out of that 100 would be more inclined to have freedom and responsibility. And then 70% of that 100 would be more inclined to have less responsibility and less freedom and more safety and security.
It makes me think about time in history, with technology. Is there a relationship? Surely there is, between the advancement of technology and the role the state plays in our society. But also, maybe that's a flawed thought. Maybe there isn't. Maybe the more technology, like Bitcoin, the more freedom, the less need for decency. But with the technology, I'm thinking, well, is it easier to live today? And if it's easier to live, is it reasonable that, or at least understandable, that people would become more less self-reliant and more dependent? So it's the role technology plays is really interesting. It could go either way.
Oh my God, that could be an entire podcast, because now I'm thinking about it. If with the advent of newer technology, you kind of would need a government to kind of keep that from anyway, we don't have to go down that road. I just almost melted my brain. I want to talk about one thing, and you don't have to get personal with this, because there's only one point, and I haven't brought them. In fact, I had some friends who's like, hey man, you've been doing this podcast thing for like not every week, but pretty often. It's like, you haven't brought up the Israel-Palestine thing at all. And honestly, I don't talk politics that much on my podcast anyway. It wasn't something, and I told him, I was like, I don't know much about this. There's only one thing I picked up on that I thought was interesting, because I'm not a political guy. I'm not really about policy. I'm way more about culture.
Tell
me your thoughts about this. I think COVID didn't do a very good job of blending the two tribes. I think it was pretty divisive, even though it got wonky at one part in time. You know, Republicans were like, wear the mask, you know, it's Trump's vaccine. And then stuff like switched and everything got wonky. But there was always two distinct party lines. Like, it was very tribal. With this Israel-Palestine thing, was the first time I was like, I can't draw distinct party lines. Especially with you, with your Jewish background, your heritage, and you coming from the left side, the Democratic side. Was it strange for you to watch that conundrum happen, where you had hardcore Democrats being all for, you know, Palestine, and then hardcore Democrats being all for Israel, and then watching that bifurcation within its own party? Because I even pay attention to the right wing. It's happened in the right wing too. It's you're watching two big parties have a bifurcation in each over the same topic. I thought that was pretty astronomical. I don't think I've ever seen that before. What are your thoughts on that?
It's definitely a really good issue to use to try to stake your ground out in this search for political identity and defining these terms. And so my dad, frankly, is not, he would say Israel has the right to exist, but he would be very critical. He's very critical of Israel. And that's just the house I grew up in, that kind of progressive, very economically progressive, not so much on the cultural issues, but very critical of Israel. And libertarians, just to tie back to that real quick, you know, they seem to oppose all foreign aid. They go back to the George Washington theory of no foreign entanglements. Vivek hits that theme a lot. So it is interesting to see that breakdown, and the reasons why. It's very interesting. What I can say is that Dave Smith, who I wasn't familiar with. You're familiar with him. I don't know how familiar with her, but I'm pretty familiar.
Yeah.
I hadn't been, and I saw him on November 4th, you know, just 20-something days after the attack. And that was really interesting because he's Jewish, he's critical of Israel, and he's a libertarian. And so that was an interesting. And so lately I've been saying, oh, I could get behind his line of thinking, but truthfully, my baseline is, you know, although I'm not ready to say I can stick up for my defense of Israel stance completely, hey, the idea that there's a right to exist there and that if someone fucks with you like that, you know, you can go in there and kind of do what you think is necessary. And that's not to say that I ever want to see people get killed, man. I mean, this is heavy shit. And but my instinct was to say, even though I'm not a very strong Jew, don't have a very strong Jewish identity, even though when I went on my birthright trip to Israel when I was like 20 and called my grandma on the last night in Tel Aviv and she said, do you feel like you're home? I said, home. I feel like I'm from New Jersey, that whole thing. That's my famous little story. No, I didn't feel like I was home. That was 20. But what I will say at 34 is that the state of Israel exists and Jewish people have a right to defend themselves. And so my instinct was to say the aftermath of October 7th the blood is on Hamas's hands. And people say, well, so that's a litmus test. Whose hands is the blood on? It's an interesting question. And I'm not ready to say anything than Hamas. So my answer now is probably Hamas, but let's look holistically at this and see if we can dissect it. You need to look holistically, and I'm sure Israel hasn't been perfect.
Yeah. I told a friend of mine, he was like, well, what's your thoughts? And I was like, I'm pretty sure I'm retarded when it comes to this. I'm not Jewish. I don't know anything about that area. But what I did say was like, if you were to ask my opinion, I would probably just fail everyone in that circumstance.
Yeah.
I probably would fall in the libertarian because I'm pretty non-interventionist. Me being a Christian. Here's another interesting thing. Not only did it bifurcate, you have, you know, Democrats split on this issue, Republicans split on this issue. You have Christians split on this issue because there's a lot of dispensationalists. They're like, this is the land chosen by God for Israel. And then you have a lot of Christians being like, that's a different covenant. And there's a whole theological thing behind it. It's the one issue I've seen hit in every aspect, really help people define where they stand on things. And that's why I thought it was to be honest, it's just horrific. Every time I hear Dave Smith or Scott Horton talk about, you know, the Hamas side or what they, it always seems to come down to maybe there's three parties in this whole situation, not the Israel. I'm talking about people's opinions. You have people going, October 7th was uncaused, unprovoked. And that it gives Israel the right to do whatever they need to do. And then you have other people being like, well, this is obviously there's a history here and, you know, this is the government and Hamas was, you know, this is a different party. It gets so the further back in history you get, the more complicated it gets. And so there's people who are like, well, this is where I stand, but then there's this third. This is why I bring it into you. Then there's this whole third group of people where I would probably fall in and go, look, we all agree that we don't want kids dying. Like, we all agree we don't want innocent people being slaughtered. If I stand in this center ground, this is the thing I don't like about it. And then the other two sides go, not good enough. Pick one. Like, that is mind-blowing to me. Because I've had that conversation. I'm like, well, I don't know enough about this. I've had people go, then learn. You need to know. And I've never seen that happen where you can't even be indifferent. You have to pick a side. And that's why I thought it was one of the most, as horrific as it is. Like, think about any other horrific thing that's happened in history. I don't know if there's ever been this much, like, well, maybe there was. I wasn't around all in history. But anyway, I found that interesting, and I tied that into where you're at searching for a political identity, because there's a lot of people that are dispossessed in a political party. And now there's dispossessed people inside political parties going, oh, man, I just thought I was rooting for, you know, not killing kids.
America.
Yeah, or not even, maybe not even America at that point. I just didn't want to see people die. I love America, but I don't like when they bomb people that shouldn't be bombed. Can I have both these stances? And now it's getting so weird out there politically, where you can't even be like, look, you're either for America and you're for bombing of everybody, like a Nikki Haley, like bomb them all. Or you're like, no, America's the worst. And it's oppressive, and we need to dismantle it down to the bottom, and, you know, wherever that goes. It's just, this is a weird, and this is why I've avoided the subject for the most part, because, again, not super smart about it. There's plenty of other podcasts who go into detail about it, but I wanted to know your take, most specifically about that bifurcation in every party, where it's crazy to see this is the thing that threw me off when they were talking about right-wing riots carrying Palestine flags. Or no, it was Israel flags. They're like, all these right-wingers with their Israel flags. You're like, wait, what? Like,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and what? That's not the MAGA coalition, I don't think.
No, I wouldn't either. But it was also a thing people going, like, I've never seen an Israel flag at a right-wing thing. I've never seen it, and it's one of those things where it's like,
what's that about? There's so many questions, where
people try to pin. They were like, obviously these right-wingers are for the bombing of Gaza. And we're like, no, look around, man. Like, this thing is split everybody into having to think for themselves.
Yeah. Somehow the right has become the party that feels more accepting of Jews. And somehow, because, you know, whether it's fair, well, no, it's not fair to conflate the government of Israel with Jews. That's not fair.
Right.
But
yeah, that was my thought.
But we have a Jewish state, and we come from a non-religious, you know, a country that's supposed to be a religious. So it's just all very weird. I mean, it would be one thing if Ukraine, well, that's weird too, because it's like no one knew what Ukraine was. But it would be one thing if the country was kind of like I don't want to call Israel a theocracy, because that's probably not fair, but not a Jewish state. It's fascinating. Yeah, yeah. We had a Jewish state out there. It's just really interesting. And you got to figure out, do I think it has the right to exist? Do I think any flaws that it might have had, any mistakes that it's made along the way, you know, does that warrant October 7th? Should we be supporting them? Why are we supporting them?
Yeah.
A lot of really interesting questions. And I can tell you that the house I grew up in was more skeptical of our unconditional support. And I have family. I have cousins who are big time supporters, and that have a stronger Jewish identity. And growing up, going to their house four times a year was like a really interesting thing for me to do, get a flavor of that conservatism, damn near Orthodox Judaism.
Yeah.
While we weren't, that really has been a big part in my search for identity, search for political identity. So I have to say that it's like a blender. And my instinct is to say that Hamas probably takes responsibility for what's going on right now, even though Israel may have strategically trapped them into creating the circumstances for such an event to occur.
Well, I wasn't actually trying to fish out what your thoughts on where your stance was. I wasn't going for that. But I appreciate you saying it. That's one of those things too. Like, what a crazy world we live in. When I heard, who was it? I was listening to somebody who was Jewish, and they were talking about being critical of Israel. Mm-hmm. And then someone online called them an anti-Semite, and they were like, Hasidic Jew. And you're like, what? Mm. How is that?
Yeah. No, because they're critical of a state. That's an easy one.
Right?
That's an easy one. But what's not easy is for a Jewish person to figure out what they believe. Because I'm an American citizen, man. Like, I'm not a dual citizen. And so I have no questions about, you know, what country I live in. but it's a harder thing to think about, you know, maybe it's just because I am Jewish. A younger Jew too, right?
Yeah.
Well, outside of the age of the Holocaust in some regards. Yeah, it's a little different. But maybe I'm just really disassociated as a Jew. I don't know.
I don't know. So I'll give you a little bit. My stance is to go pretty much where you will. Or even October 7th on face value, I'm like, yeah, obviously this is Hamas's fault. Like, that's not cool. And then everything gets weirded out from there. But I grew up obviously not Jewish, but I grew up in an evangelical Christian household. And most of my dad's a dispensationalist. He still believes, you know, like,
what does that mean? You used that word before. What does that mean?
It means contractual, like God has a chosen, I'm going to try to break this down. God has a chosen plan specifically for the Jews, a covenant with the Jews. And then God has a chosen plan, specifically for the Gentile Christians. So there's like God looks at Jewish people in a particular light versus he looks at everyone else.
And what is the ultimate end game according to that view, if you don't mind? And if it's possible to do it quickly. If it's not, then maybe it's too long.
No, I'll do it quick. There's a bunch of them, and I haven't done a deep dive into this, but when you say
Jews go to hell, no, I'm kidding.
No, actually I think that there's a special they're all going to hell. but yeah, no, I think as far as the dispensation, I think there's just, there is, man, I'm going to try not to, because someone's watching this being like, and that's not what I believe. So I'm going to try not to put words in anybody's mouth and speak on something I'm not super familiar with. But I think the end game is for Christ to return to really try to save the Jewish people. That's the most hardcore paraphrasing I've ever done in my life over such a deep topic. But I grew up in a home like that. So even in my dad's church, my dad's a pastor growing up, we had like three flags in our church, right? We had the Christian flag, which is white with the blue cross. We had an American flag because we're in America. And then we had an Israel flag. And they would specifically pray for Israel. It's God's chosen land for the people. So I grew up in a very similar vein, I guess, as far as a Gentile goes. Admonishing, that's not the right word. Exalting Israel to a certain stance in theology, and so in Christian doctrine. So Israel was pretty high up in there as far as allegiance goes. There's tons of scriptures in the Bible being like, those who bless Israel are blessed by God, and so on and so forth. So I grew up in that realm. Truthfully, I don't know why we got on this topic, but either way, we're here.
It's really interesting because religion plays a significant role in all of our identity, political identity, politics, and whether you believe it or not.
Well, here's something that I had this conversation. So I grew up for the most part all over the country, but a majority of growing up was in Texas in the South. And when I moved to New York for the first time, I was walking through downtown and I had a guy shoveling snow. And I was just sparking up conversations with everyone. I'm real friendly.
I thought you were about to say sparking up a joint or something. Okay.
Yeah, no, not quite. Okay. Conversations. Right. And I was like, hey, man, what's going on? And I just said hello because I'm from Texas. So you just wave, you talk to people.
Yeah.
He's like, hey.
Dick move in New York.
Right. But he was super friendly. He was like, hey, you know, my name's, you know, whatever my name was. And he goes, And we were talking. He goes, yeah, I'm Irish. What are you? And it was the first time I've ever been asked, like, where I come from. And I didn't know what to do. I was like, I'm from Texas. I'm a mutt. Like, I'm like so many things. I don't know what
ancestor DNA and 23andMe didn't exist yet.
I've got English and Irish and German. I've got a ton of stuff. And so it was just weird when people came right off the gate with what nationality you were. And I realized that is a New York thing, or at least in East, like upper Northeast, where you grew up in New Jersey. And I was talking to a buddy of mine about this. He said, that's because New York City is such a melting pot where you have, these are important things to know about people. Whereas in Texas, I was like, the only thing people in Texas care about is what college football team you root for.
Right. No, what county are you from?
Exactly. No one cares about what you come from. So when I started hearing about talking to people in New York and hearing about anti-Semitic hate, I was like, I don't get it. Why? why do people not like Jews? Like, it didn't dawn on, it never made sense to me. And I was like, but even, I mean, set aside the Christian growing up thing. I just didn't look at any and be like, they're Jews. I don't get this. And so that was always a weird, and I asked some people about that. I was like, I never understood where this comes from. Maybe it was because I didn't grow up in an area where there was a whole Jewish sect. And then there's, you know, the Italians and the Irish and then, you know, the ADOS. And then
you're describing New Jersey.
Yeah, New Jersey. Okay. So I didn't grow up there. So none of this stuff made sense to me. And I was like, I would have never looked at anybody differently because it never was important. Mm-hmm. And so that's right. That was a little background. So just kind of give you an idea. That's why I ask questions the way I do is because I don't, some that I'm, none of this is all new to me. This is all Greek.
Well, it's another huge reason why I framed my podcast the way I did, searching for political identity. It was mainly a rejection of the left's obsession with identity politics. It's cool to get to know people. It's good to know. I do that. Where are you from? Like, what are you like? You're like, but if I do that, it's with the obvious understanding that you're equal to me that you're here. And so it's, if anything, just kind of an interesting thing to ask someone, not, hey, let's restructure our society around perceived differences. But immigration, all of this, the mixing of identities, it's absolutely a part. And to put it simply is, do we want a melting pot or do we want a melted pot? So the classical Republican these days, you know, the Ted Cruz is of the world are for the melting pot equality, whereas the left today is no, let's deconstruct that melting pot itself and reconstruct it to something that achieves racial equity, whatever that means. It's a very different worldview, and that is critical race theory.
Communism?
What?
Just sounds like Democrats are talking about separate but equal.
It's a radical transformation of society to racial equity. So it's not separate but equal. It's equality on a statistical level between by race.
Yeah.
So is that separate? Is you're looking at people by category of race, and that's just inappropriate.
You're separating them apart by race, but they're all equal though.
Right.
You're separated
and then
by
then
race,
restructuring society
equal.
Around what you view as appropriate rules based. Yeah, you're right. It's absolutely a fragmentation of society and something that turns me off. And so it's relevant. Yeah. It's absolutely relevant. This religion conversation, identity politics, it's all relevant. And Vivek hits it very well. That's why he's so attractive to me. He is nailing. I don't know how close you've been following him, but since August, I've been following him. And he's nailing the identity theme, man. And so he's speaking to a guy like me. So if he can get the nomination, I mean, I'm all in on Vivek. I would say, especially against Biden. But if Trump, you know, gets it, like it looks like he will, I'll have to figure out that.
Yeah.
Can I vote for Trump? And it's, you know, I got family on the East Coast that have like personal beefs with him that kind of know him. So it's the whole 9 yards. It's ball of wax for me. Things that shouldn't influence my political decisions, but you know, family loyalties, you know, may even come higher than my own autonomy. I don't know. I'm trying to figure all of it out. So that's a part of it for me.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I kind of fall into a Dave Rubin stance. It doesn't matter at this point. I couldn't vote for Biden specifically because I'm against elderly abuse. I agree with you.
I have said that my feeling is that I just can't do it again.
I couldn't do it.
Yeah, I can't. So if it's Trump Biden, you know, what do I do? that's kind of the big, that's kind of where I'm at in my search for political identity. I haven't made too much progress, but in terms of the upcoming election, if it's Trump versus Biden, I don't know. That's the variable situation. But I've said I don't want to vote for Biden. If it's anyone else, if it's DeSantis, I would vote for DeSantis.
I don't mind his campaign. His campaign's been really wonky, which makes me a little nervous about how he's gone about this whole thing. He really had an upper hand. He jumped into the race. I mean, yeah, I don't know much about all of the other stuff, but it seemed like he had a pretty strong lead. He's got all of the Daily Wire crew behind him shouting his praises, but it just seemed like his campaign fell apart and didn't do a good job. And that's why he's dropped in polls. He didn't hit the right spots. He didn't sing the right notes when he could have easily done it. And I think he put way too much of his eggs into the right basket, to be honest, is like his track record. Out of COVID, he came out of the COVID in Florida being like, look, I did everything right.
Right.
Everyone else messed up. Vote for me.
Right.
That's great. Yeah. But the problem is it seems like that's all he thought about. And then when he gets asked tough questions, he's like, well, I signed this thing and, you know, I can't put these shoes on.
I was criticizing his campaign with everyone else. With the launch, remember when the X space that was Twitter at the time, I think that was failed. It was like a failed. And so it was an immediate string of not great optics.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, I think he's strong. I mean, he's obviously, you know, talented person. And I think he's a strong candidate. And anything could happen after Iowa, I guess. I mean, who knows? But I've heard, you know, rumblings that he's poised to do well in Iowa. I know Vivek is putting a lot of eggs in the Iowa basket, as everyone is. But it'll be really interesting to see which one of them. I think it'll be between them two. Yeah. But yeah, his campaign has left a lot to be desired. Nonetheless, I think he's an attractive candidate. He's a little different, but I don't mind it. He's sharp.
Yeah.
And I like his, I think he has a good heart. Actually,
I do too. I think he can pick up on that. He's not just charismatic enough as to my appeal.
It's a really good point. He is not, you know, someone who I respect immensely who does a lot of speeches on charisma. I think, and I just caught this from him the other day. Charisma is the combination of power, presence, and warmth.
Mm, that's a good one.
Isn't that a good one?
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe DeSantis lacks warmth a little bit, or one of them. He said a lot of people have two.
Yeah.
But very few people have all three. So maybe he lacks a little something, but I like him. And I never thought his Don't Say Gay bill, which was obviously the name that his opponents labeled this bill.
Yeah.
I didn't have a problem with that at all.
I didn't either. I didn't bump up against much of, honestly, if I paid attention, I like Florida. I think Florida's rocking. Right. I would vote for DeSantis at this point in time. Again, I go back that there's no way you could be like, I'm going to shoot you if you don't vote for Biden. I'd still be like, shoot me. I'm not voting for Biden.
Yeah.
That's how much, honestly, the starting off 2020, I didn't vote 2020. I was like, I'm a libertarian. I just want to see this thing play out. Let's see how it goes. I regret that decision now, even though my vote wouldn't count if I voted for Trump.
Right.
I live in New York. It's not going to matter. But even then, like, I just for my own principle's sake, I'm like, oh man, I didn't vote. I'm still going to complain because I have every right to. But now, man, I just from seeing some of the sliminess of it all from the Democrat side, I just wish somebody would point. This is how I would vote for Biden. One scenario: Biden's up there talking. Dr. Jill comes up next to him, his wife. She just, you know, takes the mic from him. She goes, all right, everybody, my husband has severe dementia. He's doing the best he can. He's struggling here. And we all know that I've been by his side trying to help him through. He's done a decent job for where he's at from what we could do. Mm-hmm. And I just want to let you know that he has a great team behind him. He's going to fumble this. We're even going to bring out the wheelchair with the blanket. We're going to FDR and bring in that sympathy and be like, look, we're just doing the best we can. And that's it. Then I would be like,
then the emperor would have some clothes.
He would have, or at least have a blanket
or at least a care team.
Yeah. A care team. Then I'd be like, at least maybe somebody's buying. It depends on who's pushing. But now if Hunter's wheeling him around, they'd be like, all right, hold on.
Smartest guy I know.
The smartest guy I know. That
Although, did you see, quick digression, there was one leak of like a Hunter Biden memo that he wrote about the gas in like the liquefied natural gas industry in Europe. And I read that and I go, this guy knows what he's talking about. Like, so yeah. Who knows? He may well be a sharp guy.
Me having a podcast about art, I'm really considering doing a whole episode over his art.
That's an amazing idea. Really good idea.
Thought about that. And then juxtaposing it with a whole episode about art used in money laundering. But I haven't figured out how to do that yet.
Right.
But
right.
We'll land this plane on this question. So if Biden doesn't run, actually, let's just start with one more question before that. Do you think he's going to run? Do you think this is a percentage wise? What's your percent that he run? Are you 50-50?
Yeah.
I'm 50-50. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
If he,
I guess I have 51% that he won't. Okay, that wasn't worth stopping you for, but
no, that's a good point. So you're leaning.
That's just my gut. It's just my gut
on that one. Yeah. If you were gonna put together the hardest, if you were gonna be like, all right, I'm at the come November, I'm at the voting booth. This is the hardest decision I'm gonna make because these candidates are really difficult to choose from in a good way. Mm-hmm. So your top team, say you're like you like Vivek a ton, which I can pick. Mm-hmm. So if you had Vivek for running for president on the Republican ticket, who would be your Democrat ticket? You'd be like, this is a tough choice.
Mm-hmm.
Who would that be?
Well, the problem is that we haven't had a spirited primary to date. And I understand, you can certainly understand, the president's sensibilities and his team's sensibilities. And, there's some probably good arguments for why there hasn't been a spirited competitive primary, but absent one, and I think there should be one, it's hard to say. I like Dean Phillips more than I like Gavin Newsom, because from the 3 minutes of media that I've seen both of them do, I just think Dean is a chiller vibe. I don't know. And doesn't have all the liabilities that I think Gavin Newsom has. I thought Steve Bullock in like 2016, or maybe it was 2020, probably 2020. I think he was a governor from Montana, just kind of a down to earth guy. He was talking about getting money out of politics. That was cool. He was attractive. It's not, Buttigieg at one time I was high on because, and I don't want to, judge him with his transportation stint too harshly, because he's a smart guy, right? But I just don't know. I'd like to talk to Pete Buttigieg, frankly. I'd like to hear more from him. He's a guy that wants structural change. He's like a thought leader, so I respect that. So someone who can articulate a vision, because that's what Vivek has done.
Yeah.
And so who can do that? It remains to be seen.
Yeah. I think if Tulsi Gabbard wouldn't have left, she would have been a great candidate.
Yeah, well, that name certainly popped into my mind. But she did, and I'm not sure what Democratic, if you will, that's probably what policies that she shares with the Democratic Party. I don't know.
Okay. If any. What about this? Oh, see, now I can't, because you obviously favor Vivek. All right, so here's a good question. This is a good one.
Hit me.
DeSantis versus RFK.
That's a really good one.
That would be pretty rough, right? That would be hard because they both have very similar stances when it comes.
Yeah, and the answer is if RFK had managed to become the Democratic nominee, then yes, he would absolutely be the answer. So I should have named him.
No, that's a good. Well, that's he's not running on the independent.
But DeSantis RFK, do you want a guy who is clearly well studied in the history and policies of our country, DeSantis, and who believes the state has a role to promote conservative ideologies? Okay, that's attractive for me right now, to some degree, for sure. Or the guy who says corporations are the problem, and we need to stop talking about progressive or conservative and just dismantle corporate power. That's really attractive.
Yeah.
It's kind of different. They're different vibes. And my big question would be, how much overlap do they have? That would be really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But between them, gun to my head, I think my gut is going to say DeSantis because I want to try something new and I like him, but I'm not sure my heart would allow me to do it in the voting booth for whatever sick reason.
I find, I mean, the other thing is probably RFK. Oh, I can't say he because he's running an independent and his stances on COVID and some of the other things leans probably. He sounds like a libertarian. But if you look at his other policies, you're like, oh, no.
Very it's progressive.
Yeah. Stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But what I do like about teaming or like comparing DeSantis, because they seem like they're cut from the same cloth with different policies on the edges.
Hmm.
But they do seem similar in character. I think their charisma is about the same. Hmm. I think that would be the hardest choice for Americans to make if putting those together. Anybody else, it would be too bifurcated, but it's like DeSantis isn't Republicans' favorite, and you could tell RFK was not Democrats' favorite.
Certainly wasn't the favorite of the Democratic Party.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean.
That's a whole nother guy. Yeah, okay.
That's what I mean. Yeah. As far as like the Republican Party, obviously from polling, Trump is their favorite. Right. So, so I would put those as second tier, DeSantis versus RFK. But anyway, man, I appreciate this conversation. One of the reasons why I like having you on is because even from talking to you or listening to your show, I can tell me and you, we think very much alike. We both have very similar stances on stuff. And most of the time it's just like, we'll wait to find out. I'm not sure. I'm not ready to commit, you know, full blown. This is how I believe. I'll give you 60%. And then the other 40 part I'm holding on to, you know, that nuanced way about the way you think. I feel that too. So, that's why I
the trepidatious libertarians.
That's it, man. I'm not full blown ANCAP yet, although I'm leaning pretty hardcore to that.
It's attractive.
It is
philosophically. It's principles. They have an answer for everything.
They do.
But maybe like me, maybe both of us are this way a bit, where it's like, hold on, skepticism of is one pure ideology really the best? That's what I'm just not there yet.
I'm not either. Yeah. And so that's kind of where I'd like to be, but I'm not fully blown into that category.
Yeah.
Maybe after this next year, what happens, then maybe I'll leave.
You know, it's going to be a big year for the country and hopefully for both our podcasts.
Exactly.
Yeah. Man, thank you so much, bro.
Hey, tell everybody before you head out where they can go find your podcast and all that stuff and where to follow you.
Sure. Thank you so much. Available wherever you listen to podcasts. It's Searching for Political Identity.
But Brian Escal. Awesome.
Yeah, man.
All right, man. I'll hit you back up. I might hit you back up right before the November election and see what our thoughts are. Maybe do a recap.
Yeah.
And like, remember back in December, we were like, what if this?
Right. No, that sounds amazing. I super appreciate you having me and I look forward to that.
No, that'll be fun.
Hope we do it.
All right, man. You have a good evening.
All right, brother. You too. Thank you.
All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning into the Pardonable Podcast. That's one of my favorite guests to have on. And I said, for the reason I said, me and him think a lot alike when it comes to politics. The fact that he has a ton of libertarians on his podcast, maybe it's a libertarian thing. That's what they do. They're just like, hey, you got a podcast? Let me come tell you about how, you know, how freedom is awesome. Maybe that's a thing, but that's where I found myself. That seems to be where Brian finds himself. He's had some great guests. You should definitely go check his podcast out. One of my favorite podcasts to listen to, especially because I might just be poaching his guests here soon. Anyway, thanks for tuning into episode 60. I think we're going to finish out the year. I think I'm going to do one more podcast, maybe two more, to finish out the year. But if I don't see you until then, Merry Christmas and have a Happy New Year.